At this time, I'd like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Herbert from San Diego. Right. Herbert from San Diego. Come on up, buddy. Let's do this. Coming to pull the step out?
Hey, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Herbert Nesmith. I have a sobriety date of April 19th, 1994. I have a sponsor. I shouldn't give his name so he can remain anonymous. No, he's actually came to be supportive of me tonight, Steve. And I got a home group on Tuesdays, and the meeting's called Don't Be a Dick. Now, what I find so interesting... What I find so interesting about all of this is that I barely know Robert, but what's so funny is, and I don't think he meant it, and I think you guys all know that he's involved in a relationship with Joyce, right? And one of the things that was so, well, okay, well, don't tell your husband. But anyway, the funny thing is, and I know he didn't mean to, but one of the things, he was wearing one of her jumpsuit things, and he took this picture, and I know he meant to send it to you, but he sent it to me instead. So I'm sitting there looking at this black guy going, what the heck? That's interesting moose knuckle there. What was he thinking? But he was all dressed in it, and he had the chains on, and he looked kind of sexy. So I started to question my own sexuality. But anyway, so he's a really good guy, and I find that he can kind of take a joke. I hope Joyce can too. But I guess I'll find out after the meeting. But anyway, so... That's it. How he tore his Achilles. He was wearing her pumps. But anyway, I'm going to share in a general way what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like today. Hopefully I'll get to the part about what it's like today more than the other crap. What it was like. I was a young black man growing up in Alabama. Oh wait, that's Robert's story. Damn it. Okay, so I was just a guy who was born out of a sense of fear and not belonging, like a lot of us. I got stuck with a stupid name named Herbie, which didn't help. I'm like the sixth one, and there's a story behind that too. But anyway, the point being is that I came out of the womb with three character traits that still stick with me today, and they're the ones I've constantly have to battle probably for the rest of my life. And the first one is, I'm a thief. The second one is my philanderer. And the third one is I'm a violent human being. And I know this because I was 6 years old when I got caught first time stealing. And I say the first time getting caught. And I've been stealing from before then. And then the philandering part was, I remember this girl named Sheila who had the red shoes that, and we were, I think we were in second grade, and I just adored her. She had the best tennis shoes ever, the red Keds. And I was so enamored by her. And I spent the rest of my life chasing red shoes. And then the last one is, I'm a violent person by nature, because I don't know if it was by accident or design to them give me that jacked up name, but as soon as it would start coming out of my mouth, all the rhetoric would come after that. Oh, Herbie has herpes. Herbie, you know, does herb. Herbie the love bug. And I would just start swinging. And I thought that was a good idea till about a week ago. And then I started realizing that's probably not the best way for me to conduct my life about a week ago. Anyway, so the point is that as time kept going on, and then I was blessed with a couple things. One was I was always pretty good, really good at school, actually. And so I thought that made me smart. Well, I was wrong. That's not what makes you smart. Well, I want it to, let's put it that way, and it still doesn't. And no matter what I can cite from some textbook, and no matter how grandiose I think I can be, I'm still pretty dumb sometimes. And so what ends up happening is here I am, and an athlete. So all of a sudden, I'm really good at sports. I'm really good at school. So people started letting my crap slide. Oh, it's Herbie. It's okay. He can play baseball. He can play football. He can... do this, blah, 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 all this crap. And so I was given a pass on a lot of things, which did a lot of injustice. Because I felt that somehow I was special and different than everybody else. Not like today. But the point being is that So here I am from basically 5 to 17 being told that no matter what I want to do, I can do it because somehow I'm special and different. And I bought into that. I don't know why, but it was all I knew. But in the meantime, it's okay to start smoking weed at 10. It's okay to start drinking at 12. It's okay to start banging cocaine at 13 because I'm me. And I am not going to suffer like that guy. I'm not going to be the guy in the with the bag. I'm so much better than that. And I distinctly remember saying to another friend of mine that we're still friends today, and I remember we were sitting there all loaded about 14, and I said, you know what, we're going to be fine because we come from good families. And somehow we're going to rise above all the fray. And he agreed. Now, he's 3 days sober now after having 7 months. So he's still buying into the BS he's got. That's the problem with my thinking, too. And so it talks about in the big book about where my ego needs to be smashed. Why? Why would my ego need to be smashed? I am very special. Ask everyone else. Understanding that all I was full of was crap. So I end up going off to some college to do some sport. I get hurt badly. That ends. Who am I? I'm a 17-year-old person. Kind of like my home group meeting. I was just a dick. And I'm sitting there trying to figure out where I am, what I'm about. I have no identity because all I've ever been was give him the ball. Throw the ball, hit the ball, do nothing of any significance. So I find myself driving down a freeway and this guy flips me off and I decide I have a good idea. Now this is how dumb I am. And I talk about being my first nature, being a thief, philanderer, and violent. He flips me off after sleeping with some girl I met somewhere. And I'm driving home in my little car that's kind of cool, and I'm sitting there and this guy flips me off and I have no idea why. So I pull up next to him, pull over, and this time about 18 F 19, and I realize there's a 12 pack of beer sitting there, so I have a weapon now, and we're on the freeway. So I start rifling these beers. So I had to get the angle right, so I got up ahead of him, so the bottles were crashing against his car. He starts waving this knife out his window, and I swear to God, this is apropos to being sober. And he starts waving this knife out the window. My first thought is, okay, so when I get behind him, I've got to create distance so I can close quickly, disable him, da-da-da. That's my plan. So after about 2 or 3 miles, I'm getting bored. I'm out of beers to throw. I'm just driving, going ping, frustrated. And I get to a place called Sunrise Boulevard up in Sacramento, and I said, if he gets off on my exit, it's on. And so God intervened and had him get off on my exit. Must be God's will. And so he gets off on the exit, and I follow him to a little strip mall. I did not know that it was a welfare center, and I didn't know it was the first of the month. So I get out of the car. We have our engagement. Everything was going fine. I'm done. I go to get in my car, and he goes through his trunk, and I know he's got a weapon. So I jump in my car and crush him into his 2 or 3 times and paralyze him. I had a good idea. Now, I left because that's what cowards do. They leave. They don't face music. Not realizing there was probably about 250 people witnessing this happening. So I go drop my car off to get fixed, because that's the most important thing. And I tell my guy, and he says, you're going to go to jail. And I was like, what? It's me. And he said, okay, you're going to go to my lawyers. And all of a sudden, it started registering that I was in a lot of trouble. Now, I'm basically brand new to being a junkie and a drunk, basically, not understanding any of what that meant. I go to this lawyer. He looks at me and says, oh, you're going to go to jail. I get out of his office, and I just run to my parents' house, and I meet the Sacramento sheriffs, like 6 cars there, and they were kind of posh folk in this posh neighborhood, living a posh life, and they had me as a kid. I feel bad for them most of the time about that, but not so much anymore because there is redemption. So I go off to jail. Now, my old man at the time, he was a retired Army guy, lifer. He knew everybody at the Pentagon. He wasn't as bitching as my sponsor, but he was close. And I'll get to that. But the thing is that he said, hey, I'm going to talk to my friends at the Pentagon. You just get this settled. Go to court. The judge says, hey, I'll tell you what, we're going to put you on a waiver. Now, what I pictured on a waiver was going to be I'd go in the military and just paint doors for the rest of my life, and I thought that was really going to suck. So my dad pulled a bunch of strings, which brought me in as an 18X, which means you get a shot at going to be a Ranger. So I go in. I'm still a thief, still a philanderer, and I'm still violent. Sergeant says, listen, you're an asshole, so I've got a place for you. And I was like, where's that? He goes, as soon as you're done here, you're going to go, we're going to try to get you, this first sergeant, we're going to try to squeeze you into Ranger as quick as possible because you are truly a horrible human being. And I was like, perfect. And he said, they're going to love you there. So I jump onto this and do this whole thing, and then I start realizing that all I've got to do is be bitching. If I can go back to being bitching, my life is going to be good. So here I'm in the military, jumping out of planes out of 82nd Airborne. Then I go into Ranger School. And then all of a sudden, I'm in the queue, qualifying for Special Forces. And all these things are happening very quickly. And I was part of, you know, 3225 initially. And then eventually it was 3221. And what that means is I end up being a Delta guy. And that doesn't mean anything. But I thought it did. And they kept giving me these stupid things. These stupid ribbons that I thought gave me value and dignity, and they didn't. And I go off to this stupid country in the middle of Africa when there was genocide occurring, and I came back in April that year, and I realized, what is wrong? I'm loaded on methamphetamines that the military has given me by the boatload, drinking every single moment of every single day, and you give me a bunch of weapons and let me loose on the world? What a great idea. Now, what sucks is I'm surrounded by 11 of her guys that are the exact same as me. One of them I even shot, and he's my friend. And it was like, that's a stupid story. But nonetheless, as I shoot him in the leg, and he goes, we got to go to the hospital. I'm like, well, I'm going to go to jail. And I'm crying because I shot my friend Scotty, and we get in front of the jail. He goes, okay, let me out, and I'll tell him I shot myself. Perfect. And all of a sudden, I got sober real quick, and he goes in there, does his thing. But all this mayhem and lunacy and basically being a jackass kept rolling along because I'm special and different. Don't you understand? Why should I have to pay any consequences because I'm me? Now, I didn't understand any of that. So I sit there and I leave. We get dropped off out of a plane. I go in for the deep at Pope, get dropped, leave there, go do my debrief. I get in my car with all my weapons. And at the time, I was the demolition guy. Before that, I was the weapons sergeant. So I had a ton of pretty good gear. My weapon systems were well intact. So I brought them with me to San Diego because that's what you do. And so I got here, and I swear to God, I thought everything was going to be okay. And then I'm sitting there curled up in a ball crying, trying to figure out what is wrong with me. And I couldn't understand. I thought it was what happened. But it wasn't, because I'm sitting there banging my dope, drinking my booze, trying to sleep with anyone, women, and trying to, I did that one guy one time, but I was in the Philippines and I didn't know. But anyway, so I'm sitting there doing my, hey, don't judge me. Don't judge me. No one told me I was supposed to do a penile check first. Come on. And the blowjob was amazing. But anyway, so the point is that, well, you got to have someone that has skill. But anyway, so the point is that all of a sudden here I am in the middle of nowhere being a nobody. And I did great bodily harm to another person that kind of deserves in my head still. But I'm still broken. So I end up getting booked. I end up getting, all of a sudden I'm AWOL too. And all of a sudden, the MPs show up and they're like, okay, well, now we know where you are. You're going to have somebody from the JAG come talk to you. And they came in there and said, listen, we spent a lot of money on you. Just get this reduced to a misdemeanor if you can, and we'll bring you back. And I was like, what? What do you mean back? I just witnessed genocide. I ain't going back, ever. And he said, he looked at me and said, what are you, a pussy? Sorry. And I stood up and I said, excuse me? And he said, you're going to just cow out of your duties? And I turned and I went back to myself and I started just crying because I had no clue who I was. I had no morals. I had no values. I had no understanding of empathy, integrity, honesty, faith. I was just I was the hole in the donut. And I didn't understand. So the judge was really kind to me, and he said, listen, this is your record. This is da-da-da-da-da. So here's what's going to happen. After a lot of negotiations and time, he said, we're going to give you a year. So I get out, and I meet Captain Extraordinaire, fighter pilot, test pilot, air boss, bitchin' white Navy uniform guy who seemingly has all his shit together. And he says to me the first time we meet, he says, are you willing to do anything I ask? And I said, yes. And he said, okay, I want you to speak tonight. I was like, no. And he said, is this how it's going to be? Probably. And so I did what he asked. And then I found myself in this most interesting place. I was less embarrassed about going to effing prison than I was about leaving my military post. And I'm not going to tell fighter pilot extraordinaire, test pilot, air boss, started the Betty Ford Clinic all over the freaking country that I'm a pussy. I found out later he was a pussy. But the cool thing is that I told him my stuff. And then I meet this friend of mine who's been the most dearest, most loving, important person in my life. Not in that kind of way, but just he's just been so important to me in every aspect. And it's, I've never loved another human that much in my whole life. And I've been married 3 times and dated a lot of girls. But the thing is, it's like all of a sudden I had a place to take my story for the first time. And then I get hooked up. Steve and I were actually being sponsored by the same guy. And so I went off and just, I was like, this guy Ralph was teaching me chapel, a lot of stuff, and he was bringing it to us about what he was learning about himself and the revealing that was going on in his life. And I couldn't understand how this was happening for him. And all of a sudden, here I am, 3-4 years sober, and I go to this guy, Ralph, who, amazing, 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 amazing man, walked like Walter Brennan, but looked like the Marlboro Man. This dude was Gorgeous George. He was amazing. 8th grade education, probably the smartest man I ever met in my life. He got it. He got everything about me. He got everything about Alcoholics Anonymous. He got everything about life. And he had a wife that was poisoning him. Huh? Love's good. And, you know, and he would spend every my days were Tuesdays, and I'd go there with writings about things that seemed innocuous and unimportant. Yes, we did the 12 steps. And we did the 12 steps on every goddamn thing you can think of, because it worked in the most difficult thing in my life. And the idea was, if it works for this, why wouldn't it work for every single thing in my life? And I didn't understand any of that. It was a language I could not understand. And even today at 31 years sober, I still sometimes struggle with the language. And what it is it's called my hubris. It's not even the language I don't understand. It's I got a better idea. Ooh, don't go in my head. It sucks. No, I don't want to go in yours either. But that's why, and how it was given to me was, here I am on top in this forest, bumping into every gosh darn tree that there is. And up on the hill, sitting like a monk, is a sponsor that says, no, no, turn right. No, no, turn left. Up on, and he's sitting in his forest that I don't see because he's up on a hill. And up on that hill is his sponsor directing him through his stuff. Now, I have a choice. And I don't know if you guys have ever had to deal with comms and stuff where you're having someone navigate for you where you are through satellite systems. And they say, turn right, you do. But here I am with a guy who's at the time, I think you were 10, 12 years sober, directing me. And I'm like, what could he possibly know? Well, pshaw, what could he possibly know? And I did the same thing with Ralph. Ralph was amazing. I was 5 years sober, didn't understand why my life wasn't bitching. Because in my mind, being bitching in sobriety meant I had the bitching car, bitching girl, bitching house, bitching job. Had no idea that this was not the case. Zero clue. And every time I hear a guy at the meeting say, oh, I got the family back, got the girl back, got the job back, got my stuff back. And I'm like, I hope you hurt. I hope you hurt deeply, because it's coming. And I'm all happy, and I'm twisting my mustache, and I'm tying some girl to the railroad tracks, and all Dick Dastardly about the whole thing. And in all honesty, I don't want him to experience that pain. And I try to talk to him about that and say, listen, you're going to face so many things that this crap you think is important isn't. Now, I didn't get it at the time, so I go buy some bitchin' car, and I still drive it. 24 years old, because at the time I needed it, because I needed to be bitching. And I go buy nice clothes. So I need to be bitching. I would go try to be bitching everywhere because, again, the self-importance. So at 5 years sober, all of a sudden the bottom dropped out, and I did not understand. Let's rewind. I came home with all my gear and all my weapon system. So I did the kindness, and then there's another little caveat. I kept an 8-ball of crystal in the freezer just in case this didn't work. And so I grew it out, and I said, I better call Ralph and tell him that he's fucking a loser. That's the sponsor at the time. And I call him, and he said, what's going on? And I told him, and about, it felt like 8 minutes later, because he lived 30 miles away, comes flying into my driveway in this hoopty piece of crap Ford Ranger. And the thing goes flying on my driveway, lands in the middle of the driveway, and I come out, and I've got but it felt like I had my bandoleros on, and I'm like, got my bandana on, my knife. And it wasn't like that. I was just batshit. But I had all my weapons, because I knew what I was going to do. And he pulled out this lever action 30-30 and set it on the hood of his car. And he says, go ahead. Do something. I'll kill you where you stand, kid. Now, this is the man who said he loved me. I'm like, you're supposed to go to battle with me, not shoot me. He backs me into my house. Sit down. I sit down. All of a sudden, I was getting it. And he sat me down with this little 30-30 lever action. He was like, what was that guy named? Chuck Connor. That he would do this and shoot, and he could hit the ball of an antenna. He took on the Hell's Angels by himself. So he was a pretty stable guy. And he understood. And there had been times when I'd go there on Tuesdays and I'd start funning him in his own house, and he'd look at me, and all of a sudden I realized I stepped over a line. He'd say, you need to leave now. I'm like, what do you mean I need to leave? I'm just messing with you. He goes, this is my house. You come in here and say and do some of the things you do. Let me help you, kid. Get the fuck out of my house. I'd leave. So I understood he meant business. And then with Ralph's sense of humor, God bless his soul. Hey, tell him I said hey. And so in his sense of humor, he collects all the weapons, which are still in Arizona with Kelly. Got some C4 Primacord, Syntex, got an M4, 1911 Colt. I had a Sig Sauer 229. I have all this shit. Not with me. I don't need a weapon. I have a coffee table. I'm good. So he takes me to over College Grove where there's a Denny's. And I don't know if you guys notice, I'm white. And so we go to this College Grove where it's a lot of people of, like Robert, just a little black. And so I'm in there with these thugs, not Robert, he's a good guy. And I'm crying, and I'm there with Hillbilly Bob with his stupid Western hat on, his stupid Western vest, his stupid Western boots, and his plaid shirt with the snaps explaining to me about life. And all of a sudden, I felt this weird feeling in my brain, and I like to call it a cog. It went click. And what the realization was is I didn't know shit about sobriety. I assumed it was all these external things. I didn't understand that I drank and used for one essential reason, and that was to provide me comfort and ease. I'm powerless over alcohol. And what's really weird is me sober, I'm a jerk and a dick and all those things. Me and a drunk, I have my pants off and I want to hug you. I'm the nicest guy loaded. I am. And many times people would say, hey, Herbie, where's your pants? And I'd be like, give me a hug. No, where's your pants? And we'd find my pants, and then I'd be like, where's the motorcycle? No. And they'd have to land my plane. But then all of a sudden they stick me sober, and I'm punching them in the head. I don't get it either. But all of a sudden I started realizing that I'm powerless over alcohol. And as the longer I've been sober, I start realizing I'm powerless over a lot of things. I think pretty much everything. And I started being asked to define many things. Define what this means. Define what that means. And Ralph would get there at like 7, give or take. And we'd sit there till 4 or 5 in the morning talking about all the stuff. And he was patient and kind to me in a way that I never deserved. And he explained to things to me that I'm not as what I think I am. I'm just a scared little boy. That I needed to take the hand of that little boy and bring him along. Not look at him and go, what the hell's wrong with you? And he taught me so many things. And during the course of my life, I was about 10 years old. I got molested by this guy. And it happens, I guess. And then I couldn't understand why I kept going back. There was many things I couldn't understand about what life brought. And Ralph and I did a ton of work on that, tons and tons and tons, to the place where I said, he said, okay, now you need to go on the journey. Okay, you're going to go try to find him. What? I'll kill him. He said, no, you won't, because here's what you're going to do. You're going to find him, and then I'm going to fly there, and we'll go engage. Okay. So I get in my car, and I drive up to Staff Gunner trying to find him. Never found him. Friend of, and he happened to be a police officer, and a friend of mine was a cop, tried to da-da-da-da-da. Never found him. I'm driving home, and I realized that there was a boulder left in Sacramento by doing the journey and the work. Yeah, that mother person is culpable for what they did, 100%. But now I'm going to let it affect the rest of my life? Did the 12 steps on all that. I'm powerless over how it made me feel. I was powerless over what happened to me. Came to lead a power greater than myself, could help me with this. Turned it over to a God that I didn't understand for about 3 years when I was at chapel. I didn't have a God, so I did everything he told me to do. I did. And because here was a man who believed in a God that I had no understanding of, wasn't brought up religious or anything, but he taught me about God. And 3 weeks ago, he taught me more about God. And when I was going to murder this one sponsor I had after Ralph's house burned down, I go to a meeting where chapel is, I'm going to go kill this mother. And he's like, well, that's something to consider. And I was like, and he literally, he's out there. Here's Captain Pilot Extraordinaire landing my plane because I'm just the student pilot. And he lands the plane. And I realized that I don't need to be that which I think I am. I might want to try being something different. Something that's never worked is being me, to be honest with you. Oh, ask John's wife. She'll tell you. she met me the first time, and I stomped on her toes, and she's like, that guy's a dick. And I had to come make amends to her. She didn't say that to everybody else. She didn't character assassinate me, but she did tell her husband. And he and I have become really good friends. And I came to this for an event here, and I made amends to her, and he accepted the amends, and I still was like, oh, you're such a God, what's wrong with you? And she accepted my amends. And here this last couple weeks, she's been helping me with some problems I've had with somebody I really love. Go figure. And so as a result of taking these steps for every event that's happened to me, where I take the whatever the event is and make a fearless and fearless searching moral inventory of myself, and I list out everything just like in the columns, then I go share it with a sponsor. Then I start looking at the character defects, which they are. And for me, they're always the same. Anger, envy, gluttony, greed, lust, pride, and sloth. And for me, I took them all on a 3x5 card. I wrote down on the back what the definition of each one was and then what I thought they were. Because I needed to be reminded of what they really were, not what I thought. And every Sunday to this day, I shuffle them, stick them on the clip on the mirror. Okay. Let's look at anger all day. Pray about the anger. I'll talk about that too. But I do that. Then the next one. And make that my focus for the day because they are always present forever and the rest of my life. For the rest of my life, I'm going to be a thief. I am going to be a philanderer and I'm going to be a violent human being. But because of this work I do, things change. Now here's the moment where it gets kind of lopsided. I had finally gotten to the place where I kept putting letters behind my name thinking somehow that made me smart. I talked about that. Not smart. And I'm at my place, and I had gotten a scholarship to go to a really, really, really cool institution, like world-ranked. And this guy shows up to start talking shit to me, which is always my life. And he had a weapon. And I'm like, oh, man. So I jump down, remove his weapon, stab him in his ass about 8-9 times. It was his weapon, and it's okay, because it wasn't mine. Cops come. A cop about this big is talking to my belly button, your buddy. It's talking to my belly button and tells me he's going to arrest me when all the other cops think, do you understand what happened here, dum-dum? All the other cops are like, let him go. This guy's always been a problem. Nope. So all of a sudden, I'm sitting in jail up in Vista going, what the hell? And what did you do? Why have you done this? Blah, blah, blah. It's not my fault. This isn't 9 years sober. Now, let me get some clarity in this. At about 8 years sober, because I was starting to arrive again back in my life and realizing just how special I was, because I am bitching. I think we've established that. And I stopped doing AA. I had drifted away. My sponsor, Ralph, his house had burned down in the Cedar Fire, so I was kind of rudderless and doing some wacky crap. But I was getting my education and working on, I was finishing up my master's and getting ready to go to MBC, blah, 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 blah. And this happened. So I get out, I call the girlfriend, say, hey, I need you to come pick me up. Yo, she said the most beautiful thing I've ever heard in my life. No. What? I have a class to teach today. No. What? So I run home like 7 miles. I'm running home. I get there, get my stuff, go to the class, teach my class, go talk to my advisor. And I told her what was going on. And she's sitting there looking at me as I'm explaining this story, how it seemed all completely normal to me to stab someone. It sounds normal. At least in AA it is. And I'm sitting there trying to figure shit out. And she looks at me and she says, I'm going to go talk to the head of the department. I'll be right back. And she backs out of her office and goes and comes back and said, hey, I needed the letters of recommendation from these people because I didn't want to go to prison. That's what I was looking at 9.5 years sober for doing an action that was not my fault. And sure enough, they wrote letters back to that institution saying, he's batshit crazy. Don't let him in your program. And I was like, what? That's normal. One more time, thinking somehow I'm better than you, better than this program, thinking I'm something special and different when I'm not. I jumped back on the beam, and I had a sponsor that was very militant at the time. I wasn't going back to Captain Fantastic because he does things like holds me accountable. So I wasn't going to do that. So I started hanging out with this sponsor, and he and I did a couple thefts together, and he'd been sober a long time. And so I was like, hey, man, this is a perfect sponsor for me because he's a pretty good thief too. And he was a bit of a philanderer too. And so I was like, hey. And one more time, I found myself in the middle of the muck and mire. That was the one I wanted to kill. Went to go see him. He's like, what did you think was going to happen, dum-dum? I didn't understand. So then I get a sponsor who just died back in April who was again back here. And all of a sudden, I'm on the beam, off the beam, off the beam, on the beam, doing this willy-nilly shit. And I had to hit a rock bottom in sobriety. And how I've always looked at sobriety, and I've heard it here actually, is physical sobriety from home base, home plate to first, mental sobriety from second to first to second, emotional sobriety from second to third, and spiritual sobriety third to home. And the only thing I had done is cross first base and thought I hit a home run. And all of a sudden, everybody started holding me really accountable. And to be honest with you, this has been the most involved I've been with my sobriety for the last 20 years. And the reality is this, is that I'm super inconvenienced by sobriety. It is so inconvenient. Half the sponsees I have, I don't like. And you're listening to this crap and you say, hey, this is what I suggest. And then they don't do it. Completely forgetting that I did the same thing going, what is wrong with you? Jesus, do what I say, click. And it was like, and what's even funnier, I lost my mind about 4 months ago over something, and I'm going off on my sponsor about something he had no control over, and he tried to land my plane again, and he goes, click. And I hello? Hello? And I called him in to make amends, and he says to me, you're still you. You know, if I don't put these things in place, 1 through 12, it isn't 10 through 12. I love that. Those are the maintenance steps. Maintenance of what? Because I can describe to you many things I'm powerless over. Right now, I'm powerless over a mom that's 91 years old, that can't get up, can't move, weighs 54 pounds, and I'm the person that has to take care of her. Could you imagine being under my care? Huh? And it's like, so all of a sudden, I'm this person that's doing these adult-like things. And I'm like, who the hell is this person? I don't even like him. He's boring. And then I go, and I'm looking at, go, turning it over to God and turning it over to anyone else that can give me any ideas of what I can do because I don't know what to do on my own. 10 seconds in this room trying to do it on my own, I'm going to get loaded. Without you people, I'm not sober. You without me is not sober. Hey, don't forget your card. Okay. Yeah, I think it's on the bottom. No, I'm kidding. Oh, no, you're good. It's called a joke. Anyway, and most people laugh at him, but hey, I do. So then I start doing the fourth step on all my behaviors, all my actions individually. And then I was then again at, what the hell is this about? Taking me through traditions and taking me through concepts. How does it go? AA protects AA from me. Protect me from me. AA, traditions protect AA from me. God damn it. Steps protect me from me. Traditions protect AA from me, and the concepts protect the world from me. And I'm in here for an hour, hour and 20 minutes. I can be fine. I can do anything for an hour. I go out in the real world, and there I am. And I keep turning to these simple programs. And this is what the steps. And what's so funny is about 3 or 4 weeks ago, I'm sitting there with Chapel, and I was having to do something in AA. And I said, and he was talking to me, and we're just talking about stuff. And he says to me, what you going to talk about? And I said, oh, I was going to talk about how my morning routine is. And I don't really like what my routine is, because it was typically you get up, my eyes pop open, and the first words out of my mouth are, F God. And then the second ones are, here's my problems of the day, and here's the solutions I'm going to bring to bear on those problems. And then I pray. And he sat back and he went, huh. Have you ever thought of maybe saying good morning, God? I was like, what? 30 plus years of saying that every day. F you, God. I got problems. I'm going to fix them. Now I'm going to pray. He said, you got the order wrong. Start out with good morning, God. Then do the prayer. And I was like, really? And this is after 30 years of sobriety. So this idea that I got it is so far removed. The reason I have to keep coming back, the reason I remain inconvenienced by this program, the reason I do things that I don't want to do, like come speak at a meeting, is because without doing the things that are asked of me that are inconvenient, uncomfortable, I'm not going to stay sober. My life will not change. I will still be the thief, the philanderer, and the violent guy. Month and a half ago, it all came to a very interesting test. I now own a construction company because the lemons I had, I thought I might make lemonade. And since I stabbed that guy, I started a construction company, and it's middle size. And one of my good friends is a 7-Eleven vendor getter and started me off in the rocket to the fourth dimension of stuff that I don't care about, which is even more weird. I don't spend money on anything, really, because it's not going to fix me. I'm with a lady I've never cheated on for 15 years. She doesn't know how lucky she is. But anyway, that's a whole different story. She's nuts, but I love her. So one of the things that was cool, though, is on a Monday, I get a call Sunday night, and it's a 24-hour emergency guy. I'm always your guy because I don't sleep. I don't know if you noticed that. And I go to the call, and I see water everywhere. And I walk in, and I go, huh, all right, that's broken. Leave. I call the people that own the property on a Monday, and I say, hey, look, your water here is bad. It's going to be 11 grand. They say, okay. I go there. I look. Takes me about an hour to fix the problem, forgetting that the real problem exists here. And what's so sad is that the drama and all that mayhem that goes in my head, some of it's even real. And that's what's so scary. But here I am at this water heater looking at it. Okay, I don't have to turn in an invoice for 20 days. I'm going to think about this because it's 11 grand for 1 hour's work. That's a good wage, 11 grand an hour. I think I could do that. So then the next day, this lady who I used to philander with, she calls me up out of the blue, and man, she had great toes. Anyway, she says to me, hey, I have an idea. Why don't you come hang out and we can chat? And I felt something jingle in my pockets, and I didn't know what it was initially, but then I remembered it's called being aroused. And I was like, oh. So all of a sudden I had an idea again, and I grew the mustache out really quick, and I'm twisting it, thinking and plotting of how I can go get some. Plus, I'm going to have that 11 grand. I'm going to have brand new sex. Well, used sex, but sex from a long time ago. And so then, and it gets better. Oh, no, it gets better. It gets better. And this is the truth. This is a Monday, the money. Tuesday, the pink. Wednesday, I'm at the gym, and there's this kid that I'm working with trying to help him learn some things. Great kid. He's one of those people that keeps his life like this. He's a goddamn normie, and I don't understand why. I'm like, dude. And he's just a good guy, and I'm like, why am I having to learn crap from a 31-year-old? I'm 31 years older than this piece of crap. Why is he teaching me shit? I'm very confused, and then I have to pay him. I don't think that's right, but anyway. So we're there, and he sees me, and he goes, hey, Herbie, can I talk to you for a second? And he's with a client, and I go up and said, hey, what's going on? And he starts talking to me, and his client starts being a dick or an unkind. And I said, I looked at him and said, hey, man, I apologize. Michael asked me over here to talk to me about something really quick. If it's really bothering you that bad, I'll pay for your session. So then he saw what I think, I'm assuming, perceived it as a weakness and started being a real dick. And I started to think, and I started to plot, and I started to remember that I'm not well up here. So I turned and left. I go to my Wednesday meeting, and I'm rageful about the money, about the pink, and about the violence. Because I did the right thing, and I'm angry about doing the right thing, because this is not a just world. Don't you know who I am? I deserve that 11 grand. I deserve her toe, or, you know, and I deserve punching that guy out. I'm sitting there just raging. And this guy sits next to me and goes, hey, I've heard you share here before. I would like you to sponsor me. And I looked at him and I started laughing out loud during the meeting. And I said, you got to effing be kidding me. This, are you kidding? And everyone's looking at me like I'm batshit. And I am. And I said, God, this is not funny, but I get it. And for the first time, to be honest with you, in a very long time, I didn't take the bait that was laid at my feet. Remember hearing the story about the guy who's sitting there on the cliff and he falls off, gets caught up in a branch, and he's going, God help me, God help me. And someone comes down, looks down, and says, here's a rope. No, no, I'm waiting for God. Okay. Another guy comes by in a helicopter. All you got to do is get to the skid. We'll get you out of here. No, no, I'm waiting for God. A boat down below going, just drop. We'll get you. I'm waiting for God. He falls and dies. He's up in heaven. He says to God, where were you? He said, are you kidding? Remember the rope? Remember the helicopter? Remember the boat? Go to hell. And so anyway, the point is, in all of that, is that, and then that same day that we were talking about my how I address God in the morning, Chapel explained to me this. He said, imagine these tools that were freely given to us in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because think about it. Think about all the times, if you have a sponsor, and I hope you do, that you've inconvenienced your sponsor and you were a dumbass. And you do something different, and you take that tool and you put it in this box. And you're sitting there with this tool, this box of tools, knowing for me specifically, is the only tool I've ever had in my life is a god gosh darn hammer. That's it. Everything. So all of a sudden, after 31 years, in spite of myself, I collected a bunch of tools. And I'm sitting there, and he's explaining to me, and we're talking about this, and he says to me, do you know what grace is? Well, of course I do. It's understanding that God is the supreme being and that he provides for all of us in all his ways. Nope. What? Nope. It is when you take what was freely given to you, open the box, and you use those tools. That's grace. Huh. What do you mean I have to do work? Yes. Rewind a little bit. So that event happened. When all that stuff was happening, I called him, and I wanted him to say, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this. He says, you've been sober a long time. Yes, I have. He said, do what you want. What? But that's wrong. Okay. Do what you want. Wait a minute. I'm shifting back to when he sponsored me when I was 3 years sober, going, no, no, no. Let me help you. Now it's like, don't be a dumbass. Do the right thing. So I'm going to close with this. Hey, you dumbasses, do the right thing. You are going to be inconvenienced by your sobriety. If you refuse to be inconvenienced, you are not going to live a content and free life. You will not. Moving is not part of AA. If someone asks you to help them move, you say, no, hire a mover. But it's about a sobriety thing. No, it ain't. It's about being inconvenienced to help someone maintain their sobriety and hopefully bring an aspect different to their life that they didn't have before. Do the work in spite of what time it is. Seriously, I don't care if the meeting's at midnight and you ask me to go. That's where I'm going. I don't care. I get calls at 2 and 3 in the morning. I need your help. I'm on my way. And here's what I'm thinking to myself: fuck you. I don't want to go. But it doesn't matter. This is foot training. If I take my feet and go forward in spite of what I think or what I feel, my life changes and gets better. I'm driving a 24-year-old car because I know now that a car won't fix me. I'm wearing a jacket, a shirt, and a tie. The only reason I need new pants is because I'm bloated now. And it was like I had to get that so I could fit in a pair of pants. But the reality is I don't buy stuff. Stuff has fixed nothing in my life. The lady I'm with now, I tried something very different. I met her. We're on our third date. She's like, you coming in? No. What? No. What? Are you a person of a different drive? No, I don't know you. She said, what? I don't know you. It took 8 months for us to copulate. And the funny thing is I got to know her as a person. I got to know her. We had a couple real fights. And she fought fair, which was weird because she's a goddamn normie. But it was like, this person I've now built a life with that I could not imagine. I don't cheat. I stole one of her Christmas presents. She didn't like that, so I took it back and told him I made a mistake and I paid for it. Then I could give it to her. She puts up with my crap. And she loves me in spite of myself, but I didn't do what I normally do, which is jump into everything head first and wonder why it goes to crap. I love you. If you were a girl, we'd be married. Exactly. And the bottom line is this is, well, no, I'm not going to be the chick. Can you imagine me all tucked and running around like that Ted Levine in Times of the Lambs? Oh, God, no. And I got to tell you, I tried that, and I turned around backwards to see what it looked like, and it was all purple. Anyway, I appreciate you allowing me to share at your meeting. I appreciate you for help keeping me sober. Thank you.
Oh, my God, Herbert, that was great. Thank you very much. One more time for Herbert.